Don't forget, tomorrow, the Honky Tonk Hat Trick, brought to you by Bud Light, Predators, Sharks, Bridgestone Arena. From 5 until 6:30, Honky Tonk Central. While you're there, register for a pair of tickets to the game and passes the Bud Light Zone. You can win a VIP hockey experience. Be sure to stop by Tootsie's, Rippies, and Honky Tonk Central before Predator weekday home games for specials on Bud Light. The VIP hockey experience is a pair of tickets to an upcoming game, dinner for two before the game, and a ride on the Zamboni during intermission. So tomorrow night, 7 o'clock puck drop, 6 o'clock pregame. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. And if you're going to the game on Sunday, don't forget Predators and Blues Sunday morning, breakfast with the Preds. That's right, a puck drop at 11 o'clock. It had originally been scheduled for 5, and because of national TV purposes, it is going to be Sunday morning at 11. So, Willie, I guess you have the morning off.
I do. I'll be there. I'll be in the house watching it, taking it in, but hey, anytime Doc Emmerich's in the house, if he's on the call, that's not a bad thing.
And we have reached out to NBC Sports, and hopefully we'll have him on before the week's end. So hope looking forward to that if we can get Doc Emmerich on the show. Let's head up about 2.5 hours up the road, depending on how fast you drive. Let's check in with Jason Anderson, ESPN 680 up there. We always like checking in with him time to time. Jason, how you doing? I guess you guys have probably been better these days.
You know, it's been very busy, is what it's been. Yesterday was a crazy day, so I am doing fine. I don't know that Louisville fans and the university are doing nearly as fine as I am, but crazy day yesterday, and I think people waking up today and realizing the sun does still come out and now trying to figure out how to move forward.
Julian Council, our producer behind the glass, went to the game on Saturday where Louisville was hosting North Carolina, and he painted the picture on the show yesterday that people were taking pictures of the 2013 banner and openly saying out loud, take pictures now while we still have it. So I can't imagine just from that, and that's just a small sample, I get it, but it doesn't paint the picture that everybody was surprised. Was this kind of the fallout everybody was expecting to happen? Or no?
Yeah, I think so. That to me has been some of the interesting part of more of the national story and reaction to this is there weren't many people in town when the sanctions came down in June that thought the appeal was going to work, that they were going to win the appeal and the banners were going to remain intact and they were going to get those games back and the wins they were going to be forced to vacate it were not going to be forced to vacate it anymore. So I don't think many Louisville fans felt that was the case. The interesting part about yesterday was the money discrepancy from an initial report about a month ago to what the actual money is. Obviously, Louisville's not in favor of the university's not in favor of the ruling and the appeals committee upholding the regular sanctions. But I think for the most part, people around here that have been following the story, and especially when they saw the Notre Dame appeals ruling as well, not many people, if at all, thought those banners were safe. So that really wasn't a surprise when they announced that those things were definitely coming down.
I think we talked to you around that time frame. Did you not take your show to Atlanta, that Final Four? Were you not down there?
We were down there, yeah. We were down there the entire week in Atlanta.
Did it happen then? Do you have to erase those? Did it really now happen? Or do you have to remove those shows, those memories, because you were there? Does that experience even happen? Does Rick Pitino have to get the tattoo removed on his shoulder? I mean, how does this work when banners come down? Do you have to delete the experience, you know?
I'm not sure. I still remember going there.
Yeah.
And I know Louisville fans are having some fun with it and saying, you know, they're showing videos and they're showing pictures of them at the game and all of that. I mean, obviously we know what happened. Even John Beilein, you know, said, I think it was last night, that, look, I mean, we played our best we could. We had a great season, and we lost to a really good team. All I know is that we played as hard as we can, but people are saying we won the championship, whatever. You know, I'm not going to say that. I'm just going to say that we played hard. So I think there's certainly coaches that recognize what's going on, and I think nationally people look at it and go, okay, you took the banners down. You can vacate it, but Reggie Bush won the Heisman. We saw him play that year, whether or not he got a lot of money or his mom got a house to go to USC, he still was the best player in college football. Whether or not there were a couple players on Louisville's team that had a striptease dance at a party, they still were the best team in college basketball in 2013. So those things happen. They won the championship. The NCAA is going to take it away. They'll vacate the records, and people will have some fun with it at Louisville's expense, and they'll be the first ever team for a college basketball national championship to have it vacated. But people will still remember what happened that weekend, and they'll still look back and say Louisville was the champion.
Yeah, you set it up perfectly. I mean, that's really what I was getting at. In all seriousness, I mean, I said this yesterday. I'm just not sure what this really does, other than officially, if you look in the record books and you see an asterisk, and then you read up, and then you know what's been vacated and what was brought down. I mean, yeah, that I guess for official purposes, but other than that, I'm just not sure when they do this to programs, really what they're accomplishing.
It doesn't seem like a deterrent
to
keep teams away or coaches away from cheating, because especially with the national reaction, and that was some of the pushback, I'll be honest, certainly from Kentucky fans, of saying, hold on, they're still going to raise, or people are talking about they should put up some sort of other banner, so you're essentially saying what they did was right and what they did was okay. And it's like, no, I'm not saying what they did was right. Nobody's excusing anything that happened at Louisville, but we're essentially talking about the paper penalty of taking a banner down or erasing victories and vacating those. It's not a deterrent. If you're a coach and you say, okay, I can win the championship, and I can get all the bonus money that comes along with that, by the way, and nationally people are going to recognize that championship, and then 3 or 4 years later somebody comes in and says, well, actually there was a player ineligible, and so we're going to take those games away. Like, nobody's taken the accomplishments away from Memphis in 2008 playing in the championship game, and I think if coaches look at it that way and they go, okay, I can risk it. Now, I'm not saying they're going to do that and risk cheating based on the sanctions and the appeals committee and their ruling, but it certainly isn't a deterrent to keep a coach from saying, oh, there is no way I'm going to do that because that might happen to me. Doesn't seem like that's all that big of a deal in the grand scheme of things. At least nationally, even, it's not all that big of a deal.
How big of a deal is the big dark cloud that's lurking in the background? And you know, the hint that more bad things, even bigger, bad, worse things that's going to affect a lot of people is just around the corner. What do you see the fallout being whenever this next round is released?
That is just, at this point, man, it is such a huge unknown with this university, and especially the basketball program, because the silver lining, if you want to call it that, I think there were a couple of silver linings, if you want to actually go down that route, was one, the money wasn't nearly as extensive as what was first reported. $600,000 to $1 million is doable. $15 million, I think, people will look at it and say universities have a lot of money, but Louisville's battling right now a $48 million budget shortfall. The athletic department still being subsidized $7 million from the university. A $15 million hit would be a big deal. So I think that was one of the silver linings. And the other one was, okay, this is now officially passed. There's a finality to it. You can move on with this behind you. Because even as the appeals was sitting out there, it was, you still got to wait for the appeals. Oh, and by the way, the FBI thing. So this is behind them. There's a silver lining. But the future is still incredibly murky. There is no clear picture. If the FBI thing wasn't going on, then you can say, boom, it's behind you, move on, and now look to the future, because the punishments were essentially in the past and they weren't in the future. But the FBI thing, nobody knows. I mean, is it Pete Thamel's 50 teams, you know, of what source he told him? Is it Mark Schlabaugh's 3 dozen teams of a source that they told him? Not sure. Nobody really knows. And nobody even knows if the information will become public. Nobody even knows if college basketball as a whole will be turned, you know, completely upside down. I highly doubt the NCAA will want to go and rip apart college basketball and bring all these programs to ashes while destroying the product that they make the most money on in the NCAA tournament. But we'll see. That's such an unknown that it's really hard to feel like everything is behind Louisville right now, just because there's a finality to the scandal and the recruiting scandal that took place, because nobody knows what the FBI thing is going to do. And for all of the fans out there that go, is my team involved, and you don't know, well, Louisville knows for a fact their team is involved.
Jason Anderson is with us, ESPN 680, up in Louisville. And Jason, is anybody, you know, I know he hasn't yet because it would be big news, but is anybody going to catch up with Rick Pitino? Do you expect him to say anything in light of all this?
He's actually having a press conference today at 3 o'clock Eastern in New York. They released a statement today, from maybe his attorney. I'm not sure. It's Mark Mukasey. Not sure who that is. Says Coach Rick Pitino will make a formal statement about recent events at 3 o'clock Eastern Wednesday, February 21st, 2018 at the law firm of Greenberg Tarog LLP in New York, New York. So that is actually today, 3 o'clock Eastern, Rick Pitino will meet with the media, and I can only guess Rick will make sure everybody knows that whatever happened yesterday, he is the victim of all this.
Yes, I'm sure, and I'm sure the tone will be outrage, right?
Oh, shameful. The NCAA, what they did was wrong. It was over the top. They did nothing wrong. It was one person that did this, is what I expect to hear.
Who has the best Rick Pitino impression on your station?
I mean, I don't know. I feel like I do an okay one. I'm not sure anybody else tries to do that impression. I feel like I'm like a scale of four on a scale of you know, 1 to 10, but I'm not sure anybody has ever attempted, so I'll give everybody else a 1 or 2. So by default, maybe me.
What do you think will come of the lawsuit? I mean, he got fired. He was owed all this money. It's clear that he thinks he's owed some of this. What, anything going on with that? Any latest developments?
Yeah, they actually set a court date for September of 2019 for the lawsuit by Rick and the counter lawsuit by the university. Now, they did set up a mediation session for May of 2019. I highly doubt this thing gets to court. I think they carved out 10 to 12 days for the court case in September of 19. It's not going to get that far. I think the judge will also make sure it doesn't get that far. The issue that people are paying attention to around here is that both sides have asked the judge to keep all the details and any evidence sealed from the public, and he has not ruled on that yet. I personally, and from a personal standpoint, and I think everybody else selfishly, really wants to see that information released, and I think there's a couple of reasons why it should be released, quite frankly. There's a big public interest for this entire story. Louisville is dealing with the budget shortfall they are. The state, the Commonwealth is dealing with a lot of budget issues, and this is a publicly funded university, and there is a battle over contract issues, and if this person had a breach of contract and he's still trying to get money, what is the evidence as to why he deserves it? What is Louisville using against him as to why he deserves it? And there's it's a public interest. And so I don't know what he's going to rule. I've been told that if both sides want it to happen, that the judge will typically side with that. But the latest is they are still going through their litigation. They're still going through their negotiations, I guess, for a buyout, if you want to call it that. But I will tell you this, Louisville is pretty staunch, and they don't want to give him nearly as much money as he may think. And I think there's a chance Louisville says, we're not going to give you a dime because all of the things that happened under your watch and where Louisville is right now, you really think you deserve a buyout? No, we've got plenty of grounds to fire you for cause.
How do you think the team has handled the situation? They're still suiting up and playing, and you know they've been competitive, and they're trying to get to the NCAA tournament. So how do you think they've dealt with all of this?
It's interesting. I don't really know. Like the peripheral aspects of dealing with it, I'm not sure on the outside. But obviously they've had to deal with it because 2 days before practice started, Rick Pitino was fired. And David Padgett had to take over. And he ran practice for a week by himself. They couldn't have another assistant in there. He literally was the only coach in practice for a week until they got Trent Johnson and Greg Paulus, and they filled out their staff. And so, they played well at times. They played disconnected at times. Oftentimes it looks like they might be distracted, but I'm not sure how much this team is being is the outside influences affecting their particular play, or if it's just there's a different coach. David Padgett's different than Rick Pitino. He's not nearly as hard on the players, where any individual little mistake is going to get you pulled out of a game. That's not the case with David Padgett. Case in point, with North Carolina, Anas Mahmud, 7 foot, the tallest player North Carolina played for 31 minutes of that game was 6'9". Anas Mahmud in 20 minutes grabbed 2 rebounds, and yet he played 20 minutes as a 7 footer. That would never have happened with Rick Pitino. He would have found himself on the pine until he went out there and actually tried to rebound, but for whatever reason, it's just not the same. And so I don't know if that's the players know that it's not as much of a strict mentality, so they can feel like they can freelance a little more. I'm not sure, but they look like a different team, especially defensively, than they have in years past. And maybe that's more of the impact of the FBI rather than people around or chanting on road games, FBI, why guys are at the free throw line. It's probably more of the actual literal direct impact with David Padgett being the coach and a couple of assistants they never met, as opposed to Rick Pitino, Kenny Johnson, Jordan Fair, and David Padgett, the guys that they've known for the last couple of years.
I saw recently, Jason, where Dan Issel was named the president of MBA to Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
Because of what's going on, and I know this stuff has been out there for a while, and now that there's a new arena, and that market, I think, is always had an eye on maybe professional basketball. But if this thing stays down for a while, this program, you know, stays average or below average for a good while, they have to dig out of this. How much do you think that will help, if any at all? I mean, what's realistic about professional basketball to Louisville?
It is a ongoing debate here in Louisville about professional basketball because it is a it is one of the largest markets that does not have a professional sports franchise, but Louisville is viewed as the professional team. A lot of the corporate dollars goes to the university, goes to the athletic department. Papa John's is located here in Louisville. A lot of that money goes to U of L and the athletic department. His name is on the football stadium. KFC Yum Brands is here in Louisville. The KFC Yum Center is the name of the arena. So there's a real worry by Louisville fans that if an NBA team were to come here, a lot of corporate dollars were to go to the NBA team at the expense of the university. But the issue you run into is if Louisville starts to struggle, they still got to find a way to pay for the Yum Center. And right now they're not doing a very good job of paying for the Yum Center because there aren't enough dates in that arena. An NBA team would certainly help alleviate that. I went and looked at the Pacers schedule along with the Louisville men's and women's basketball team. In the month of December, there would be 13 straight days where there would be an event at the KFC Yum Center that was just basketball, men's, women's, and NBA, if that were the case. So it is an ongoing debate. I think there are a lot of people, businessmen now in town, Dan Issel, there's a lot of people that have a lot of money around town that want to see it happen and would like the NBA to be here in Louisville, but we are so far away from that. I do love what they did and announced last week, and that is having Dan Issel and a group dedicated that their job is specifically to putting Louisville in the best possible position when the NBA expands, because we're all under the impression Seattle's getting one. Well, you got to go to 32, so who gets the next one? Vegas, Mexico City, Vancouver, KC, some of the other cities that have been thrown out there. Louisville wants to be a part of that mix, and if it takes 4 years for them to expand, it's Louisville spending 4 years putting all of their ducks in a row that if they decide to expand, boom, Louisville's got everything ready to go while a number of these other cities are saying, hey, we should throw our hat in the ring too.
Hmm. Interesting. Hey, the next time you have Dan Dockich on your show, let us know. We'll listen in.
Yes, the next time would be the first time and probably the last time too. So.
Jason,
always fun.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, guys, anytime.
Jason Anderson does a great job up at ESPN 680 in Louisville, and just wanted to get you a little perspective.
What is the
up the road
insight for people that do not know about the Dan Dockich?
All right, we'll come back and we'll
address that.
Yeah, we'll address that and more on the other side. You're listening to 102.5 The Game. Our man C Mace, Chris Mason, coming up at 1 o'clock. Also, give some things away before we get out of here too. Now, you heard Jason Anderson from ESPN 680 talking about the fallout up there after yesterday. They had four seasons of a lot of winning removed and some Final Four banners and a national championship banner taken down around the Louisville basketball program. And at the very end, I threw in a little zinger of, hey, the next time you have Dan Dockich on, who's come on this show many times, he's always fun to talk to. We know his deal. He's very outspoken. But we've always had a friendly and fun conversation with him. But evidently, it hasn't been friendly and it hasn't been fun between Dockich and the Louisville basketball fans. Julian, you're going to kind of help us.
Or the Louisville media, period, with Dan Dockich.
Yeah, well, I've even seen, I know we've had Matt Jones on recently, and I know that Matt and Dockich have certainly gone at it many, many times, too.
Yeah, every weekend
so
on Twitter.
I think it's the state of Kentucky. And Dan Dockich.
Yeah, Dan Dockich has gained many enemies throughout the Big Ten country and apparently in Kentucky. But, yeah, he does a radio show up there at 1070, The Fan in Indianapolis. And he had reported a couple weeks ago that Louisville would have the banner taken down, which, like Jason said, wasn't exactly going to be news to anyone because everyone expected that to happen back in July when all of this came down with the NCAA sanctions. And also he reported that $15 million would be owed to the NCAA from the school. Now, yesterday we find out that, yes, the banners do, in fact, come down, but the NCAA report says it's only going to be $600,000, although they do have to spend pay back money in conference revenue over a three-year period, which would be up in the millions. So we don't know if it's going to reach $15 million. Doc Hitch is tweeting out yesterday, going on a show, talking about how, oh, you can call in to our phone number and apologize, or you can, you know, just congratulate me. There's a huge, awful announcing piece this morning about Doc Hitch and basically being vindicated by being right on his report, although the figures might not be all that right, all that great. So there's tweets yesterday from Louisville media people like saying, well, Doc Hitch was sort of right, but he was kind of wrong. And Jason, who we just had on this morning, had a 15-tweet rant basically deconstructing the whole awful announcing piece and kind of tearing down not only Doc Hitch, but the guy who wrote the thing, who's really just reporting the media report, but whatever. But it's interesting to see how Doc Hitch and Louisville media are going back and forth, because he's calling Louisville media fanboy media, because the university, if you've ever read any reports, Tom Jurich, the former AD, had a pretty big stranglehold on what you could and could not say in that town, which has led to the perception that they were fanboy media, even though that wouldn't be fair to guys like the people we just had on and Jason.
Well, that's it's pretty well documented, by the way. I mean, if you talk to people, that absolutely has gone on over the years under Jurich's watch when he was in
place.
I would agree that the fanboy media thing probably does have some legs to it, but let's remember where Dan Dockich played, Indiana.
Indiana.
Don't think Bobby Knight didn't have a huge stranglehold on the media for years and years there before the lid blew off. I can't wait for that next 30 for 30 to come out, by the way. Those were amazing times there, the last few days at Indiana, or the last, I think that's what it's called, the last days at Indiana, Knight's last days. But for a long time, he completely filtered everything. He had control of what was going to be written about
the
program.
Did they sit down with him like they did the two bills?
Oh, I don't know.
I haven't even said if he's a part of it.
I don't know if he is or not.
My guess is he's probably
Probably not. Also, should be noted with Dockich, the Louisville AD, the interim, Vince Tyra, came out back when Dan had this report 2 weeks ago saying that he was embarrassed for Dan.
Yeah, I did see those comments. I was embarrassed for Dan.
I think Dan kind of got the last laugh, even though.
Can you really say that right now in Louisville, that you're embarrassed for somebody else after all of this?
Yeah, but then Jason in his tweet said that what Tyra was saying was that he's embarrassed for Dan for acting like a petulant child going about this whole report. It's just fun. I love media beef. I love Dan Dockage. I'm one of the few who actually does. I appreciate him as an in-game studio analyst.
He's outstanding.
Oh, he's great.
He's really good.
Now, on Twitter, yes, he can make a lot of people mad. And it's funny because I remember listening to games. He called a Carolina game earlier this season. I knew he was making so many Carolina fans angry. I'm just like laughing. He's like, I know so many of you are mad. And he will actually point out in his on TV, he's like, I see you guys tweeting at me right now, and I don't care. So I appreciate his honesty. It might be blunt honesty, but it's his opinion. That's what makes him great.
I don't think he has a beef with this state, because every time we've had him on, he's been fun and he has a good time with it. So I don't think he has any ill will toward Tennessee. I don't think.
He doesn't cover the SEC.
No.
Maybe next year when Vanderbilt's good, they might bring him down here. We'll see how that goes. But for right now, we're all cool with Dan Dockage. I like him.
I'm cool with Dan Dockage.
No,
I like
he does
him.
A really good job.
Yeah.
He does. So, speaking of, last night, talking about the hoops, we really haven't touched on the craziness that yet again in this conference, where you just scratch your head and you go, how did this happen? I mean, how in the world did Mississippi State go to Texas A&M and beat the Aggies down in College Station? The Aggies have been rolling. They look really good, especially at home. What? And that's not even the biggest head-scratcher. The biggest head-scratcher that I have, I'm talking zero explanation for, is Ole Miss going into Columbia, Missouri and beating the Tigers in overtime. How? Andy Kennedy is out. That was his first game not on the sidelines. And so they've got the interim coach in, and they go to Missouri and beat the Tigers. Then Kentucky. I was telling Julian. So in here, in the studio, Willie, I've got one television on the Preds Red Wings and the other television. I was flipping around, but at the start of the game, I flipped over to Kentucky and Arkansas. Watching the Predators game, the first time I glance over, I see Arkansas up 11-0. In the sequence, the two possessions, it was Arkansas missing about seven shots in a row, but collecting the rebound. Kentucky couldn't get the rebound, and Arkansas just kept shooting. And I thought, oh, my goodness. And I told Robbie Stanley, who was in studio with me. I think this is going to be a long night for Kentucky, because yesterday on the show we talked about Arkansas and how good and dominant they've been at home.
14-1, winning by 17 points per game.
I thought it was 18.
It was. They said 17 on the broadcast last night. I thought it was somewhere around that.
Yeah. So, I mean, they have been, you know, slaughtering teams in Fayetteville, and I thought, oh, my goodness, they are going to get run out of the gym. And Kentucky wins by 15. Vanderbilt hangs for a while, but they end up falling by 10 to LSU. I mean, it's just, once again, Vanderbilt is the theme of college basketball for most teams. Really good at home, Jekyll and Hyde. At home and away, two different teams. It's like they suit up two different teams for home and away games. And that was the case for Vanderbilt last night. But yet again, we come away when the smoke clears from another night of SEC basketball, and we can do this virtually in every conference, and you go, how in the world did that happen?
Well, I think we know the answer. I remember telling you this at the beginning of the year. We had this discussion when Tennessee was 0-2 to start league play, that I said, this is going to be one of the more entertaining years in SEC basketball, because on any given night, anybody can beat anybody, especially depending on where the game is played. LSU, for example, might be number 10, number 11 in terms of where you would rank them in the power rankings of the league. But for a 10th or 11th best team in a league, they're good. They have talent. They have some guys who can really get after it.
Well, until last night, they were the only team that's gone into Fayetteville and beaten Arkansas. That was their one hiccup at home.
Yeah, which was wild. And also with Ole Miss winning, that's their first road win of the season against a Missouri team that had won four in a row before losing at LSU this past week and right at the buzzer, and now they've lost two in a row.
I think it speaks to the parity of the league, though. There is the bottom is much better, and the top is devoid of mega giants. You know, they don't have great teams at the top, but it's going to make for a fantastic, we keep saying this, it's going to make for a fantastic SEC tournament. It's going to be outstanding.
It's going to be insane. And I'm going in 2 weeks. I will be there covering it for thegamenational.com.
Nice.
And I have literally zero expectations.
I told Julian today before the show, and I'm not saying this for effect because we're having this conversation. At this point now today, after especially last night, which was kind of the tipping point for me, because if you'd have told me going into last night Ole Miss was going to beat Missouri, I would have been on the floor laughing. If you'd have told me Kentucky was going to win by 15 in Arkansas, I would have been on the floor laughing. Mississippi State, Mississippi State, Texas A&M, that still was an upset, but that I wouldn't have been on the floor.
But Mississippi State,
they have been right there in all the I watched their game in Missouri. It was a great game. They lost in overtime. Mississippi State on any
given
night,
talent.
They can beat anybody. So that's not a laughable in the floor, pounding the floor going, yeah, right. Those other two games, I would have said, yeah, right. I told Julian, and I mean this, I would not be surprised at this point that anybody, and I mean anybody, yes, Ole Miss, yes, LSU, yes, Vanderbilt, yes, Georgia, anybody could come out of St. Louis and cut down the nets. I would not be surprised if anybody got on a roll. You get hot, you start hitting shots, anybody could win the SEC tournament.
Well, Julian pointed this out to me the other day. That's why I think it's important for the teams at the bottom who all bring something to the table. You want to avoid having to play the fifth game.
Yeah, right? On Wednesday.
Nobody wants to have to win five. Who was it that did that? UConn
did it with Kemba Walker.
Yeah.
And won a national championship.
But that's ridiculous.
Syracuse unbelievable. Do it 1 year?
No,
I think they won four.
I think that was you're talking the year where they had the six overtime game. No, I don't think that was. I think they played four games, but they lost a championship game.
Okay, but it's a lot harder to win five and five.
I was talking about the Mac.
It's hard enough to win four and four.
McNamara?
Yeah, Jerry McNamara. I remember that year. I can't remember.
That was 4 days.
I thought it was.
No, that was four. It was four games in 4 days. Only team I know that's won five games in 5 days was UConn, winning back in 2011 when they won national championship. That would be the only time. But yeah, well, at this point, when you're looking at St. Louis NCAA tournament, the only teams I guess I'd count out would be the teams that have to play on Wednesday night, because I don't think there's a team I know that could get hot, but I don't think any team that's going to be in the bottom five has a player like a Kemba Walker that can carry them for 5 days in St. Louis. But yeah, you get to the teams that are going to be there only playing four games in 4 days. Absolutely. Like that top 8 or top 10 rather, any of those teams can win it. The betting favorite will probably be Kentucky because they have the most talent, and we'll see how they finish off these last three games. But I would not be counting on Auburn, Tennessee.
If we were assessing odds, would Kentucky be the favorite?
Just with
yes,
the fans,
name value alone.
They're up there, but I don't know if I would take them. But that being said, last night was one of those nights where, and this happens, and Julian, you do your homework on this as well, but when you start putting together your, okay, here are the teams that are tracking towards the NCAA tournament, here are the games tonight, and you look at the scores, if you're supposed to win, like last night, I would say Texas A&M tracking to get into the tournament, need to take care of business against Mississippi State, up, didn't do it. There's like a bunch of those games last night, especially in the SEC, where you're going, wait a minute, that's not how that's supposed to go, and it throws a monkey wrench into everything. Like Mississippi State, even though they right now are on the outside looking in, that's the kind of win that if they could go on a roll and win the next three, all of a sudden they'll get into the discussion. There will be, I don't know if it's going to be Mississippi State, there will be a team that has not been mentioned or has been mentioned as a team that is, well, they're out. They're not going to make it. That will rise up and get in there.
I'm trying to look at bracketology. I want to say that Lenardi was starting to reconsider Georgia after they swept last week Florida and Tennessee, because that puts them – yeah, they're right now – they're in his next four out. So they're slipping – they're stepping up there after they kind of had fallen off after losing to Vanderbilt on the road. And you speak of Texas A&M, this is a team that had won, what, four in a row, had gotten back to 500 in the SEC after having an 0-5 start to conference play, now lost three in a row, 6-9, three more games to play. No team outside of Oklahoma has ever had been up four games under 500 and gotten an NCAA tournament at large bid. They're at the point where if they don't go 2-3 to finish off the season and then probably win one or two games in St. Louis, this team's going to be left out of the tournament field. 6-9 right now, and then, of course, where are they going? Here on Saturday playing Vanderbilt, who's just won five straight games at home, and you can't favor anyone to come into Memorial Gym right now and beat the Commodores.
So
they're in trouble.
That's a toss-up. That's why last week when we did our first bracketology, and we'll do it again next Friday, I had less locks than I can remember at that time. And I think because of that, you're going to see more shuffling. So the teams like Georgia and Mississippi State that might be a little discouraged right now, hey, on the outside looking in, they're still alive. They can make the run back in there because the bubble is so wide. There's a lot of teams that are not locks right now. There are some. Tennessee's a lock, but as Rick Barnes has been pointing out, we don't want to just make the NCAA tournament. Our expectations are higher than that. That's why he's been on them like he has. But if you're worried about them getting into the tournament, you're not really worried about that. Some of these other teams, like Texas A&M losing last night, they got to sit there and go, whoa, wait a minute, I thought we were going to be in. They're going from, hey, we're almost there to, hey, man, we've still got some work to do.
And we're playing on Wednesday night currently in the nightcap against Vanderbilt.
Woo, that's not a gimme. Look out, the spoilers at Memorial Gym.
Which sets up, yet again, with all that being said, another intriguing matchup tonight. Georgia at South Carolina, Alabama at Auburn, and Florida in Knoxville against Tennessee. I think they tip at midnight.
I will be there.
You'll be there.
I'm heading up to Knoxville.
So after you're just going to leave the game and come straight in for the show?
Most likely. I think I should be able to get back around 1:30.
Yeah.
Look, hey, you said yeah last time. I got back right at midnight. So, look, I figured it out. I'll be fine. I'll be here.
Let's see. 8 Central.
What we're finding out is Julian is hardcore.
Oh, I'm
we're talking
life.
Hardcore.
Yeah, you're going to have to make some time.
I'll be fine. No one's going to be on the road coming down 40 at night.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not doubting you. I doubted you on the other trip. I'm not going to doubt you on this one. How's that play out? By the way, that's another one.
Zero expectations. I'm just going to go up there.
And just enjoy.
Enjoy the game, and we'll see what happens.
The key is going to be Grant Williams, really, right? I mean, that's how does he respond to his coach calling him out? And if he has, a game like he's had all season, basically, and he's a big part of, he's tearing it up, then Tennessee will beat Florida. They will.
How about this for Florida, right? They're sitting there last week at this time, going into their Wednesday night game against Georgia. Looking good. 17-8, 8-4, good wins, solid resume. They lose to Georgia where they gagged. They had a 5-point lead late on their home court, lost. Come into Vanderbilt and lose. They're at Tennessee.
You could say they gagged that away too.
I don't know about they gagged. They didn't quite get it done.
They were in control, and they let it get away.
I never felt like they had full control of the game.
They were close. by 11 in the second half.
Yeah, they were, but that happens. I mean, there's runs. But they're at Tennessee. They're home against Auburn. They're at Alabama. They're home against Kentucky. They've got four tough games left.
Well, think about this. If they lose tonight, they will have lost five of their last seven games. That's not the way you want to be going into tournament play.
And they'd still be tied for fourth place.
And they still have Alabama and Kentucky.
Yeah,
they could be tied. They could lose tonight and have Alabama lose and actually move up and be tied for third.
But could they go 1-3 in these last four? No doubt.
Yes.
To finish 18-13, 9-9, that could happen. To where they go back to the bubble and have to sweat it out a little bit going into the tournament, that could happen. You mentioned it. Georgia is at South Carolina. Georgia wins that game tonight. Decent road win. They creep up a little bit. They stay in the discussion.
Boy, 2 weeks ago, another one. In the floor laughing. What about Georgia? Yeah, right. Yeah.
They win at Florida. They beat Tennessee at home. Now can they do it? But this is where the separation happens, right? The teams that belong in the tournament usually rise up and grab those spots. And the teams that are pretenders tend to fall off.
Yeah, and you say turn 13. KenPom right now has Florida projected to finish 19-12 and 10-8 in conference. So he has them projected to lose every game up until they beat Kentucky at home in the finale. Man, the SEC is a mess.
If they go 2-2, I think they'll be fine.
We'll come back and wrap up the third hour. Speaking of longtime announcer, we'll tell you who's hanging it up. In fact, I think he's doing his last game tonight. We'll tell you who that is on the other side. 102.5 The Game. Our man C-Mace coming up at 1 o'clock. He's going to be emceeing Preds and Threads, right, with Lindsay?
He will.
Look, if there's somebody who's going to talk fashion, I mean, Chris is known for his fashion sense.
I agree.
I think Hal would like to throw his hat in the ring, too. Hal and Chris are very good. They have very good fashion sense.
Mace makes bold choices. He has been getting a lot of thumbs up. He comes to the rink, different places. Last night, Detroit. He's been going with the vest, right? Uh-huh. The three-piece. People are like, hey, the vest. It's coming back. It's like a trendsetter. Now everybody's all about the vest.
That's when you know
they like it.
That's when you know you're cool, right?
He was on the cutting edge. That's the cutting edge that I've been talking about.
Yeah, but you're not.
He's on the front side.
I'm not. It's your word, and you're not even in it.
I'm not there. Not when it comes to I am with music. Not with the fashion. I got labeled by a fan the other day. He was giving Mace all kinds of props for his fashion sense. He goes, you got to help Willie over here. He's just too plain Jane. He's always plain Jane. Well, okay. Can't win them all.
A guy that we've heard for a long time, watched and heard for a long time, Willie, is hanging it up tonight. He is going to be a part of the Louisville-Duke game. He is going to join Dan Shulman, Jay Billis, and Maria Taylor for the broadcast. And this is it for Mike Patrick. He did a bowl game. I think his last football game was the Iowa State-Memphis game. That was his last bowl.
Correct.
Game. And that was what, December 30th, right?
Yeah, it was the Liberty Bowl, December 30th.
Yeah. And he's going to be a part of the broadcast. At 35 years, Mike Patrick's been at it.
Is he stepping away or is he being phased out? What's the – like if you look at the last 5 or 6 years, he has not been
– no.
He doesn't do the marquee games like he did for a while. For about 10 years, he was doing big, big games.
Well, remember, ACC did, Wednesday nights, so he was always calling that.
No doubt. And he did ESPN Sunday Night Football for how long?
Oh, yeah, he did do that for a while.
He did it for a long time.
And I think he was like the number two guy behind Musburger a little bit there for college football, too, because he was calling the ESPN college football
sure
games
was.
On Saturday nights. But, yeah, no, from what I've seen, he's done at ESPN after tonight, but he has not ruled out, Courtney Offal announcing, has not ruled out not broadcasting otherwise.
somewhere else. He did a lot of women's Final Fours over the years.
He was great.
Let me ask this question.
A lot of Pat Summit Tennessee games.
Remember the weird game where he said, what are we going to do about Britney Spears? Yeah. Remember he said that with Todd Blackledge?
Mm-hmm.
Was that like a tipping point for him in any way? Or would this have happened? Is he just on the normal arc of a very successful
career? The phase out, I think, was already in motion, right?
Yeah, because he's been on like the ESPN. He's been on like the B330 game, and they put him with like random people. Like he's had this past year he had Tommy Tuberville, who was just awful on TV. Because they just given him like random guys. He was with Ed Cunningham, and then Ed retired because he couldn't handle. If you read the LA Times article, he just couldn't handle being involved in football, knowing the concussion issues going out there. So he's kind of been demoted the last 5 years.
At least, yeah.
But
he's a guy
he's been there for so long. It's always tough. Like you watch and you're like, demoted. Ooh, that's got to be tough. But most broadcasters would take the body of work that he's had over a long period of time. So naturally, at some point, you're going to take a lesser role. It's just got to be tough because only the best of the best stay all the way to the end at the very top and then step away.
Well, look, we've seen it on the Olympics with our buddy Scott Hamilton. As much as we love him, fan of Scott Hamilton, but you know, he's obviously still involved in the Olympic coverage, but he is not front and center like we've grown accustomed to him over the years. And you know, everybody could see it 4 years ago. Tara and Johnny were going to be the hot thing,
the big thing, and Scott Hamilton knew it. I mean, that and he's handled it tremendously well. That New York Times article they did on Scott Hamilton was fantastic.
Yeah, everybody knew he would.
I remember Tim McCarver when he was replaced for the top spot, which he held that for 20-something years, right? How many World Series did Tim McCarver do? I mean, tons. Going back to the 80s, he started doing them for ABC before he was doing them year by year with Fox. But when he was replaced, the first thing he said was, I'm not retiring. He still wanted to do games. So that's understandable. Pat Summerall, when he was taken down from the top spot, he still wanted to do games until the very end when he wasn't, it was clear that he was not the same as he was. Dick Enberg he went from doing Super Bowls every other year to being like that number two, number three guy when the Titans first came in.
A lot of people that we have grown up with for a long, long time, a lot of big names, big name broadcasters, no more, right? I mean, we've had this slew of Keith Jackson, Enberg, like you said, all these guys that we have seen on the biggest stages, no longer in the booth. It's kind of weird. And you know, I'm not willing to put Mike Patrick in the same breath with them, but he's right there.
Well, this will be interesting if we get a chance to talk to Richard Deitch about a guy like Mike Patrick, because he's a different category than a Pat Summerall or a Keith Jackson or a Dick Enberg. Summerall and those guys, who unfortunately Dick Enberg and Keith Jackson recently passed away, but those were guys that you grew up watching in the pre-cable era for a lot of us, at least for a good portion of their career, where they were huge because they were doing so many national events. Mike Patrick is more of an ESPN cable guy who you didn't see on the big, big stage, but he was a guy that was constantly, I'll bet you could put together his top 20 games, biggest games that he did. It'd be 20 great sporting events, right? Because as you said, women's Final Four games, big Saturday night college games, big ACC tournament games. I mean, tons of memorable games that he was on the mic for. NFL games, as you said. He did the Music City Miracle, Mike Patrick, right? That was Mike Patrick, Joe Theismann, and Paul McGuire that did that game.
Yep, that is correct. I remember Pat Summerall coming here years ago and doing a luncheon that I attended and just being open and honest about some of his struggles. And that's some things that some of the greats they've had their struggles out of the booth. Pat Summerall struggled with alcohol. And, it affected his career. But and it was that was a really candid luncheon. I'll never forget that. In fact, I believe it was – where Where was that? Was that at the Omni? No, that couldn't have been at the Omni. I don't remember which hotel downtown. But, yeah, so Mike Patrick tonight. This is it. Last game, Duke and Louisville. What we think, with ESPN at least. Does anybody think he'll be in the booth again? I'm going to say
know.
No. I don't think so. I would say this is probably it.
Could go the Dick Enberg route and be with one single team because Enberg gave up the job at CBS, moved over to down to San Diego, called the Padres games there before he retired, and of course he passed away earlier this year.
That is a route that some take, no question.
So I'd see something like that.
All right, we'll come back and we'll kick off the fourth and final hour with our man Chris Mason. We'll get back into a little hockey talk. We'll do that next on 102.5 The Game.